This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Earlier this month, Raleigh was selected to host one of seven climate change research hubs in the nation. The hubs are going to help farmers cope with the challenges they're already feeling because of climate change. Stephen McNulty is a research ecologist at the U.S. Forest Service in Raleigh and director of the USDA Southeast Regional Climate Hub, and he joins us today. Steve, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Nice for inviting me.
Tell us about this, about the hub. What does it mean? Who's all involved in this, and what kind of things are you going to be doing?
Yeah, the hub is actually centered out of Raleigh, but it's supposed to represent the entire southeastern United States. So we have an office on the campus of NC State, but we're working with partners from state, federal, and non-government organizations all across the southeast. So everywhere from Louisiana east and from Kentucky and Virginia south.
What kind of work are you going to be doing?
Well, the hubs are a little different than what the USDA has done previously. Back in 1990, they actually started to fund climate change research in USDA. And so for the past 20-some-odd years, we've been doing a lot of base research. In other words, trying to understand what climate change impacts would occur across the southeast and, to a certain extent, what we can do about them, what kind of management options we have to address them. What we really haven't focused on as much as we could have is take that information and make sure it gets into the hands of the landowners and land managers. And that's really what the hubs are going to address, is taking that information.
Yeah, because, okay, so there's the research, climate change causing kind of weird weather, droughts, floods, all of those things. Farmers sure know it. They're dealing with it. So what does it mean then to get the information out? I mean, if you're a farmer, you know the weather's weird, whatever you think is the cause. So how does this change things for them?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. Originally, when they started looking at climate change research, you'd hear a lot of information that may say 10 years from now, 20, 50, 100 years from now, the temperature will be such or the weather will be such. What we found out, what we learned, is that really what matters is the short term. So what will this next 3 months look like? How well can we predict it? What does that mean as far as planting your crops? Are you going to have to plant earlier? Are you going to have to plant later? Maybe there's going to be a delay in when you can harvest. And also, how much variability will there be within the growing season? So those kinds of things are the types of information we want to get to farmers and make sure they have access to.
So is this just a kind of a high-tech farmer's almanac you're putting out? Or?
Well, hopefully we've come a little farther than says Ben Franklin. But no, it's not. I mean, one of the first things we need to do, though, is to kind of pool the resources. Who knows what about forestry and land management and agriculture in the southeast? I've, for example, worked for the Forest Service since 1991. And I thought I had a pretty good handle of who was doing what. Not really. I mean, when we were putting together this proposal, it's amazing the resources that are already out there. So job one is just to get those resources together so other people know about them.
Now, what are the adaptations that we're looking at right now?
Well, it depends. You know, in things such as forestry, for example, that's one of the areas that we're focusing on. And I should mention that each one of these hubs is headed by a different part of the USDA. And in this case, the Forest Service, who I work for, is heading this particular region because forestry is so important to the southeast. So as an example in forestry, we may see more periodic droughts or we may see more episodic wildfires associated with those droughts. Well, certain tree species are better adapted to wildfire than others. For example, the native longleaf pine species in the southeast, very well adapted to wildfire, whereas the more commonly planted now loblolly pine species is not. So one of the adaptation strategies might be to plant less loblolly pine and more longleaf pine in the future.
So this is for commodity forest products, I assume. What about other forestry, other land management, including urban land management? Do all of these things factor in? Will those kinds of management questions be part of what you're looking at?
They will, and I think this is a good example of where we need to partner maybe not so much with other USDA groups, but maybe Department of Interior or Fish and Wildlife, or USGS, United States Geological Survey groups, because some of these groups really focus on those other levels, whether it's inner city or whether it's water resources. And so what we're doing in the southeast out of Raleigh is we actually have a website, and we're working very closely with some of these other federal agencies so we don't overlap, but we can really build on each other's strengths.
It sounds like your end user is a land user, some kind of farmer, somebody involved in commodities. Is there a policy component to this? Does the information add up, and does it inform policy decisions about how to use the land?
To a certain extent, yeah. If you're a farmer, every farmer is probably more aware of the politics and the bills that are out there than just about any other citizen, because it impacts them so much as far as subsidies and those sorts of activities. Same is true in forestry. So to a certain extent, we need to incorporate the existing policies into whatever adaptation plan and, or strategies we develop.
How do you reach farmers with this information?
Yeah, farmers are an interesting lot. I grew up in Wisconsin, so I'm pretty familiar with farmers. And, they're very independent, particularly the individual farmers. Now, corporations are a little different. But I think one of our big challenges will be reaching the individual farmer, and particularly maybe minority farmers that are always historically underrepresented as far as their interests and needs. And that's going to, frankly, be a big challenge for us. The initial way we're going to get a lot of people is just through websites. So we're going to develop a website that's going to be a sort of a go-to clearinghouse for the Southeast for agriculture and forestry, make sure as many people have access to that as can have access. And then beyond that, I think we need to rely on more traditional methods such as extension agents and folks that really know the individuals that are in these areas that no one else does.
Now, look, this hub presumes that climate change is a real thing. Do you encounter resistance among farmers to the very concept of climate change?
Well, the short answer is to a certain extent, yes. But what we're really focusing here is not long-term climate change, but we really focus on climate variability. So how much variability will it be from precipitation or rain this month to next month? How much will there be in the amount of rain when it does come? Those are the issues that farmers can relate to, because it's short term and it's the thing that really drives their crop. So when you talk about climate change, you may get a very different response than if you talk to weather variability.
Well, isn't that what the USDA and the Weather Service and others who are sort of involved in this kind of, isn't that what you do already? How is this different?
Yeah. Well, what we do now is we may look at strategies for maybe a three-month forecast. But what we might not say to them is, okay, well, we know it's going to be a very wet spring followed by a droughty summer and then an early frost in the fall. Well, what are you supposed to do about that? That's the part where the farmers are willing and the land managers and the foresters are willing to do something if they know what to do. But the problem is that there really hasn't been that push to get that information to them. So, again, the strategy for the hubs will be to make sure they have that information on how to adapt or how to react to these changing conditions.
Yeah, there's always a question of this kind of adaptation. We're facing something weird going on, even if it's the short run. Governor Pat McCrory was on the talk shows on Sunday, and he talked about his concerns about the cost to our economy when we focus too much on climate change.
As a governor, we're walking that fine line of keeping our environment clean, but also continuing the economic recovery and making sure things like power are affordable for the consumer.
Governor McCrory saying, look, you got to be careful these adaptations as long as they don't impinge on economic development. Is that a concern of yours going forward?
Well, what we really focus on are sort of the no-loss adaptation strategies. So that means these are good practices regardless of whether we see increased variability or not. These are still things that are going to benefit the landowner. Such, for example, one of our major parts of the USDA is the NRCS, the Conservation Service. And so conserving soil, for example, reducing tillage, reducing soil erosion protects the water quality. It also increases productivity on the land. So, if there's heavier rains, more frequent, intense rains, erosion goes up when you have exposed land. But if there's not that type of rain pattern, it's still good practice. So those kinds of things, I think, really are the first things that should be adapted.
Are there any sort of technological or industrial factors? I'm thinking about North Carolina, also a manufacturing hub, and we've been talking about that recently. Is there a link, and does this in some way link to economic development? In other words, are there fixes that require some kind of investment?
Well, this is sort of the base product of where all of that economic development comes from. If you don't have the raw resources in which to do the manufacturing, then you have a big problem. And so when President Obama was here about a month or so ago, came to NC State, he talked about some of that manufacturing development. Well, this is supposed to kind of maybe take it one step before that and make sure that they have the resources they need. And yes, there probably are some certain industries and certain technologies that could benefit from that. But a lot of it is just really applying basic common sense and management adaptation strategies that we've always had, but maybe in a slightly different way.
Now, when you talk about regions, the Southeast region you talked about and the fact that forestry is an important part, are there then micro regions, smaller regions within them that have their own special interests that you'll break out as within the hub?
Yeah, there are. In the Southeast hub, we have the Caribbean sub-hub. And so the Caribbean area is completely unique from the rest of the Southeast, yet there's a lot of overlap as well in sort of areas of concern. So the way that we've developed the hubs is that we'll have the hub centered in Raleigh representing the Southeast, and then a specific group in Puerto Rico that will be representing the Caribbean sub-hub.
I just love having a sub-hub. It just sounds great.
It's great.
Sub-hub is a terrific term. Steve, thank you very much for being in the program.
Appreciate it.
Stephen McNulty is a research ecologist at the U.S. Forest Service in Raleigh, the director of the USDA Southeast Region Climate Hub. On the State of Things just ahead, a photography exhibit that captures the culture and ceremony of masquerade. We'll do that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.